Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, "Our peoples are finding that they have common aspirations. They can work together for a common objective. Let us never lose hold of that truth." That was President Roosevelt's message then. That is my message now.
President Obama's message at the Summit of the Americas in Trinidad over the weekend. Now, one of the guest hosts while I was away last week was Mario Murillo, who is chair of the Radio, Television, and Film Department at Hofstra University, but also with a Colombian background. He just spent 6 months there as a Fulbright scholar. His books include Colombia and the United States, War, Unrest, and Destabilization. So he is very much steeped in these issues in this area of expertise. So I thought we would flip Mario into the guest's chair for a few minutes this morning because of the summit. Big news for our hemisphere with a possible thawing of relations between the U.S. and Venezuela. Obama and Hugo Chavez seeming to chit-chat comfortably with each other at the summit. And the president continuing to reach out to Cuba.
We want to be open to engagement, but we're going to do so in a systematic way that keeps focus on the hardships and struggles that many Cubans are still going through.
That's Obama's careful voice, choosing every word with great deliberation. So Mario Murillo is back with us now. Again, he's chair of the Radio, Television, and Film Department at Hofstra. Just spent 6 months in Colombia as a Fulbright scholar. He's on WBAI once a week, as you may know, and his books include Colombia and the United States, War, Unrest, and Destabilization. And Mario, thanks for filling in last week. Was it fun or did my producers drive you crazy?
Are you kidding me? It was a pleasure, and it also allowed me to escape my academic duties for a few days.
There you go. Well, welcome back to the guest chair. And listeners, we are opening the phones for anyone from Venezuela, first of all. I know you're out there. And anyone from anywhere else in the Americas, Latin America or the Caribbean, Venezuelans, we know Venezuelan immigrants to here, tend to be anti-Chavez. Do you even like Obama playing nice-nice with Hugo Chavez? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And anyone else from any Latin American or Caribbean country, what do you want from U.S. relations with your country of origin? And is Obama going to be any different than any other president? 212-433-WNYC. Call us if you're from Venezuela or any Latin American or Caribbean country originally. 212-433-9692. So, Mario, help me deconstruct this from the U.S. and Venezuelan perspectives. Venezuela first. Why is Hugo Chavez, who has held the United States in such contempt, suddenly sounding like he wants to be Washington's friend?
Well, I think he recognizes that there is a very popular president in the White House right now who, and I think Obama expressed this in his words. I think one of the most important words and comments that Obama said in his public address on Friday was that he has a lot to learn and he's very much looking forward to listening, which is an approach that in previous administrations, Democrat and Republican alike, was very rare. You had U.S. presidents coming in basically shunning any criticism directed at them, and at the same time, in the name of democracy and human rights and development, basically imposing many policies for many years on those fronts. And I think Obama, in a very eloquent way, came to the summit with an open mind of some clearly the reflection of a person who's traveled extensively around the world and doesn't look for simple textbook answers. He searches for nuance and complexity and perspective, and I think people like Hugo Chavez welcome that, and I think that was something that was evident in their warm and I would imagine very genuine welcome when they met each other on Friday at the summit.
But let me play skeptic about that for a minute, Latin American skeptic, because Barack Obama may not be George Bush, obviously, but aren't the basic U.S. economic interests and foreign policy goals the same under this administration in ways that Chavez, with his values, would still abhor?
Well, that could definitely be true, but I think the other thing that Obama recognizes is that that Venezuela is not an enemy of the United States. It's not a threat to the United States. All we have to look at the ongoing relationship in terms of the simple exchange of resources, the crude that the U.S. depends so much and so heavily from Venezuela. And I think there's a mutual understanding that it's not a threat. And I think Obama's also a person who understands that the rhetoric, despite his expressions of concern, as he did on Sunday about the rhetoric coming out of Caracas, he also understands that rhetoric has some basis in personal response. I mean, in 2002, the Bush administration supported the coup, the illegal coup that was carried out against Hugo Chavez that eventually was turned around by a popular uprising against the coup organizers. I think I'm sure Obama has been briefed on the amount of support and backing that the government of the United States has provided to the opposition in Venezuela, which if it had been turned around against the U.S., if the Venezuelans were doing something like that in the U.S., it would not be acceptable. So I think, again, those are reflections of the nuances that Obama seems to welcome and understand, and I think that is something that could lead to a constructive engagement between these two countries.
Let's take a phone call. Joseph in Manhattan, originally from Venezuela, he says. Hello, Joseph.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Actually, the speaker just addressed exactly what I was going to say, and that was that, you know, the United States and Venezuela have traditionally shared good relations up until 2003, when Chavez, whether you like him or not, has been democratically elected in the country three times, and he survived a referendum vote a few years ago, and the United States talks high and mighty about democracy, but, you know, the Bush administration supported trying to remove this man from power. And it's very... It's
right,
very
but let's
also.
Go back. Now let me play skeptic from a sort of U.S. more conservative perspective here. When was Chavez first elected?
In 1998.
And did he come in then rattling the saber against the United States?
No, absolutely not, and neither did his predecessor Carmona. You know, Chavez has never been a saber rattler. It was
just in reaction to Bush.
Precisely.
Do you back that up, Mario, or did he come in? Because, you know, Mario, come on, you host a show on WBAI. If you read Noam Chomsky and people like that, they will say U.S. economic imperialism toward Latin America has been roughly consistent from Democratic administration to Republican administration and back again, the big sweep of things. So did Chavez not come in with that on his lips in 1998 when Bill Clinton was president of the United States?
I think Chavez was coming in from a much different perspective in 1998 than even as recently as 2002 when he was toppled or at least suspended for a couple of days by the coup. His position was much more railing against the corruption of the Venezuelan state that was, for so many years, as your caller just expressed, supported and, you know, and embraced by the U.S. governments, Democratic and Republican alike, particularly because of their interest in oil. They were never concerned about democracy and corruption in Venezuela when the oil was flowing freely into the United States. Oh, Chavez's rhetoric and his strong position against the United States started evolving over the years, especially after the coup in 2002, in which the U.S. clearly took a position against the Chavez regime that, as your caller rightfully pointed out, was a democratically elected regime.
Right. There is no excuse for that coup. It doesn't even get enough attention. It's one of the low points in the Bush-Cheney administration, and by most Americans' view these days, that's saying a lot, but that they supported a military coup, even just a year or two after all the countries in Latin America had gotten together in the fall of 2001. In fact, I think it was actually on September 11th, 2001, when the Latin American leaders got together and said, no more coups, only democratic change in our hemisphere. And then the U.S. went and supported this coup attempt, briefly successful in Venezuela. By the way, I saw that video of Chavez shaking Obama's hand and then handing him a book at the summit, a book by an Uruguayan leftist. Are you familiar with that book or that writer?
Absolutely. Eduardo Galeano is one of the premier, well-known, most respected writers in all of Latin America and internationally. The book that he handed over to President Obama, and Obama was clearly, he seemed to be a little uncomfortable with that whole exchange.
Right. Well, I saw that video and all this talk about the warmth between the two of them, and I thought, well, what is Chavez doing? Is he making nice to Obama, or is he leafleting him?
Yeah, well, not leafleting. Eduardo Galeano's book is, again, it's a very important book. It's probably one of the most. It's up with the 100 Years of Solitude of Gabriel García Márquez and many other great authors. Except that this book is a documentary history of 500 years of colonialism in the Americas, going back to the original conquest up until the United States. And its relationship with the Latin American countries, and it's broken up. The book is really unique in the way it's broken up. It doesn't go chronologically. It doesn't go in terms of regions, in terms of countries. It looks at it in terms of the resources that have been taken by the and have been used as perhaps the primary motivating factor of European and later U.S. Colonialism in the region, and it documents clearly the exploitation, and most recently, of course, of oil. And I think when a person like Hugo Chavez hands that over to Barack Obama, who says he's there to learn, who says he's there to open his ears and understand what's going on, hopefully he'll sit down and actually read the book. It's by no stretch of the imagination a leaflet, a pamphlet. It's a book that is well-respected and understood. And I can tell you right now that generations of Latin Americans have read that book and look at that almost as important as even the Bible.
And it's translated into English.
Absolutely.
Winston and Douglaston, you're on WNYC. Hello, Winston.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I had a question on what kind of research or journalistic experience do we have with the Obama administration trying to handle something that's been going on in Colombia for 50 years in the guerrilla warfare, the attacks both on the political aspect of the country and the utilization of the money from the drug lords to create chaos and to destroy any kind of possibility of foreign investment in a country that has great riches of petroleum, gold, flowers, and natural produce?
Well, this goes to the country of your heritage, Mario Murillo. What do you think about Winston's spin on the drug war?
Well, I'm not quite clear if I totally understood the question, but I can tell you right now that the Obama administration has been very cautious in dealing with President Álvaro Uribe and the government of Colombia. The government of Colombia, as you know, Brian, has, of all the countries in the hemisphere over the last 8 years under the Bush administration, was probably the closest ally that the president, President Bush, had in the region. While every other country was falling, so-called falling to the left, Álvaro Uribe was faithfully embracing the U.S. war in Iraq, faithfully embracing the war in Afghanistan, and, of course, welcoming all the military and other assistance that he was receiving from the Bush administration. So he obviously misses that. Uribe misses that. And Obama came in during his campaign. He was very critical of the human rights situation in the country. He was very critical of the lack of protection for trade unionists in Colombia that has been perhaps at the forefront of the union movement here in fighting against the Colombia-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. And I think Obama has been cautious about that. Now, in this most recent summit, ironically, human rights activists, I'm sure, in Colombia who are reading the papers today and trade unionists are probably a little concerned because Obama actually did meet with Uribe, and it looks like they're going to restart the discussions, and he even called it a number one priority for the Obama administration to try to get that free trade agreement passed.
He ran against the Colombia Free Trade Agreement in his campaign. Now he seems more open to it, but also with Colombia and the drug war. I actually want to play a montage that Fox News Sunday put together yesterday of Obama going all over the world and apologizing for taking responsibility onto the U.S. for various problems that it has mostly blamed on others before. And as you will hear in this montage, drug use in the United States is one of them.
There have been times where America has shown arrogance and been dismissive.
A demand for these drugs in the United States is what is helping to keep these cartels in business.
We've at times been disengaged, and at times we've sought to dictate our terms. But I pledge to you that we seek an equal partnership.
So various examples in Europe and in Latin America of President Obama talking about a new openness, a new change, a new introspection. But what about that specific acknowledgement, Mario Murillo, of the U.S. demand for drugs? Does that really change U.S. war on drugs policy toward the supply chain in Colombia and elsewhere south of the border?
No, it sounds really good because, and this is a reflection of Obama's reaching out not only to a domestic agenda here in the United States. In fact, in all these apologies that he's supposedly making, Obama is talking to the other world. He's talking to the world. He's not talking necessarily to the U.S., and you have to give him credit for not, you know, kind of pushing aside the short-sighted domestic politics that very often have powerful constituents that resist any kind of change in terms of international policy. So he's talking to, for example, in Colombia, in Mexico, in Latin America, who for years have been saying, you're always looking at us as the problem when you guys are part of the chain. The U.S. is where the drugs end up. The demand for cocaine and for the finished product that's supposedly being started over here is also part of the problem that you're not addressing. Whether or not that's going to result in truly different policies, we have to be very skeptical about. If you look even at Mexico, much of the military, much of the assistance that's being directed towards Mexico is not going at judicial reform, at institution building. It's going towards security, the same kind of approach that was taken in Colombia. And again, it doesn't necessarily resolve the very complex problems that have many different levels in terms of the drug trade.
Peter in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hey, how are you doing?
Okay.
I just wanted to, it seems like there's a couple of altruistic inaccuracies with Chavez because, I mean, the man tried a coup against a democratically elected leader in 1992.
Right, and he has taken steps to try to weaken the checks and balances in Venezuela's government as well. So it's not like this guy is a big small D Democrat, right, Mario?
No, there's definitely a lot of room for criticism of about Hugo Chavez, some of the steps that he's taken that's even contradictory to the measures that he was instrumental in pushing back with the original constitutional reform that took place after he was initially elected in 1998. And even past supporters of Chavez have been concerned and have expressed reservations about those moves. In 1992, yes, indeed, Chavez did carry out a coup attempt in Venezuela, and he served time for it. He paid the price for carrying out that illegal action, and in 1998, by then, he had already built up a movement that had a lot of popular support, leading to his election in 1998. So, yes, we can always look back at history, but I think that was one of the messages that Obama was trying to make, and he did a good job when Daniel Ortega of Nicaragua laid out a 50-minute critique of U.S. imperialism in the region, and Obama didn't necessarily kind of walk out like in past summits the presidents or leaders of the U.S. would walk out of those things. He actually kind of made light of it and said, I'm glad you didn't blame me for something that I did so that when I wasn't even born, when I was 3 months old.
And Mike posts on our webpage, Obama is Chavez's worst nightmare. He no longer has a boogeyman to blame for Venezuela's problems. And that's where we will leave it, this conversation on the Summit of the Americas with Mario Murillo, chair of the Radio, Television, and Film Department at Hofstra, just back from 6 months living in Colombia as a Fulbright scholar, author of books including Colombia and the United States, War, Unrest, and Destabilization. Mario, always nice to have you in either the guest or the host chair.
It's always my pleasure, Brian. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up in a minute. We will introduce the latest Brian Lehrer Show, Satire Slam, and we want you to chime in. Stay with us.